Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm very pleased today to be chatting with Kara Levine, who is the director of the Families and Healthcare Project at the United Hospital Fund. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Carol is the author of the lead article in our family caregiving series that we're doing with the support of the AARP Foundation through the generosity of the Valeria and Jacob Langeloth Foundation. This series is kind of a phase two of a series we did and a special report we did back in 2008 on state of the science professional partners supporting family caregivers. And in that first phase, what we did was convene a symposium that included social workers, nurses, patient advocates. Carol was there.
Yes.
People from the government, the offices on aging, physicians, psychologists, anyone who had could be considered a stakeholder in how we can better support family caregivers. Out of that project, we identified several needs that nurses and social workers could improve their care and support of family caregivers. So this second phase of the project is to create some a video with an article that further helps educate nurses and social workers on how they can best help family caregivers, both in their initial role and then ongoing support. So, Carol, talk a little bit about your experience as a caregiver and what led you to this work.
Well, Sean, I became a caregiver, unlike many caregivers for whom caregiving is a gradual onset as an aging parent declines. I was a caregiver for my late husband, and it was a result of an automobile accident. So it was a traumatic event. It happens with other caregivers as well, a stroke or a heart attack or something. Mm-hmm. But it was like one day you're one person and the next day you're not. And he was in a coma for 4 months. He had a traumatic brain injury. He was in rehab for a long time. And then he came home with me, and he was at home for 17 years. And so I became his caregiver at home with a home care aide during the day. During the first few years, I was totally lost and really struggling to try to make this work. I was determined to make it work, but it was hard. And then I turned my professional life toward the situation that I and many other people were in and said, what is wrong here? Why can't I find the right help for me and for my husband? And I've been working at that ever since.
Now, let me ask you, during that time period when, for example, when your husband was first going home from the hospital, did you get any kind of education or training about how to do things for him or how to help him or, you know, for example, feeding and bathing and those kinds of things?
I got very little help in that regard. He was what is called a two-transfer person. In other words, two professionals had to be on hand every time he had to be moved. When coming home, he suddenly overnight became a one-person transfer, and you know who was the transfer person? Me. Mm-hmm. And I had no ability to do it. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't skilled enough. So there were, I must say that in the rehab facility, a lot of the therapists really, you know, tried very hard, but he was so disabled that it wasn't really a question of, you know, helping him to learn to do things. He wasn't ever going to be able to do things. And I think part of my problem in those first few years is that nobody was honest with me. Nobody really said, you know, look, this is what it's going to be. Learn to get along with, you know, do the best you can. So I struggled thinking that it was my fault that he wasn't improving.
Getting better.
Yeah, and then it just became, you know, increasingly clear to me that basically no one wanted to tell me the truth. And that was really hard. So it was almost wasn't a question of I didn't get the right training. It was a question of I didn't understand what I was dealing with, and that somehow everybody backed away from the reality of it until I suddenly said, wait a minute, you know, this is 5 years now. If something was going to get better, I think it might have happened. And yet I was determined to keep him at home. And so, you know, we worked out a very, very fragile system. So a lot more could have been done had I understood what was really the prognosis for this, and it just didn't happen.
So in your experience, nobody came to you and said, okay, here's what we're dealing with, here are the skills that you may need, or or rather than even saying here's what you need, no one came to you and said, all right, how are you going to manage at home? What do you need?
No, absolutely not. It was assumed, in fact, it was said to me many times, you're going to have to quit your job, you're going to have to get rid of anything you have and go on Medicaid because you can't, you know, there's no help for you. A person like you, there is no help. And get over it. Basically, you know, I was just told, get over it. You can't work anymore. This is the rest of your life. And I just resisted that, and I resented being told that. It was not very sensitive. It was not very understanding that I had come late to a professional career. I was determined to keep it going, and that, in fact, it was important to my husband that I keep going. So there was no opportunity for anything that was really a conversation about what life was going to be like, how it could I could make the best of it, and how my own needs were going to be met in those years.
And so from that experience, you've really sort of become a champion of caregiving.
I have. I never started out to be that. I started out to find out why this was going on. I was trained as a historian, so I always looked, you know, why are we in this situation? What's going on here? And then I was at that point working on issues around children whose parents had died of HIV/AIDS, and then that funding was drying up, and I said, I think there's something going on here with family caregivers being asked to do basically nursing, skilled nursing tasks, and came to the United Hospital Fund without a clear plan, without a clear program, and said, I really want to look into this. And the more I met other people in similar or even different situations, the more I learned, the more I understood, the more I realized that, you know, basically it wasn't my fault. I wasn't a failure as a caregiver. It was a system that wasn't set up to handle situations like mine or situations like many other people were in. So I guess it just grew.
Yeah.
In other words, I didn't start out to...
You were in the so-called right place at the time.
Yeah, well,
I
it certainly wasn't a place.
No.
I think it was first I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then I tried to make something better out of what had happened and tried to be a source of at least information and sort of guidance for other people. And not that I was alone. There were many other people, and now there are many, many poor people. But at the time, it was kind of a lonely place to be.
Right. Now, flash forward to now.
Yes.
And the article that wrote is the lead article of the series, which came out of not only the work we did in the earlier symposium, but also we also did a focus group. And from the focus group, that confirmed and reaffirmed what people were saying and what came out of the initial symposium, which is that, and which nurses know, everything starts with an assessment.
Right.
So what we identified, of course, assessment was number one, is that we have to know what caregivers need, what they want, where they feel they need to go. So talk a little bit, if you would, about how you feel it should be approached and how we talk about it in the article.
Right. Well, I think that you're right, nurses and social workers, assessment is step one. But in the situations we're talking about with a chronically ill disabled person, it's patient assessment. And then there's this little piece of, you know, psychosocial stuff and who lives with you and who helps you. There's not typically anything about the caregiver, the family member, or the friend or partner, and that person's needs and their capacity to be able to provide the level of care and the intensity of care that's required. So the idea of caregiver assessment, which is certainly didn't come directly from me, though there's been a lot of work done about caregiver assessment, certainly is an important issue. I think the difference and the point that I wanted to stress in this article was that many caregiver assessments are based on assessing long-term burden, stress, how people are doing over the long haul. Because of my work here in transitions in care, which certainly has become, you know, the mantra of the moment, it's the immediate assessment that really matters. It's the hospital nurse seeing a patient and a family caregiver. They're going home in 2 days or 4 days or whenever. What does that caregiver need to be able to make that transition home in a safe and effective way? So it's focusing on the moment rather than the long term. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the crux of the article is, yes, it's busy in a hospital. Yes, it's hard to do. And yes, some caregivers resist it. But that it's really critical in order to set up a care plan that works for the patient. You just have to know, does the caregiver live near? Does this caregiver have a health problem that is going to prevent him or her from doing some task? Rather than just assuming, A, that this person who comes every day is the caregiver, and the second, that they can actually do it. So it's that moving from the longer-term needs, which are still important, to right now, how do we make this transition work better?
Mm-hmm. And now, in the article and the video, we do talk about a few specific tools.
Yes. We used, I talked about the tool we developed here in our Next Step in Care campaign. It's called What Do I Need as a Family Caregiver? And it builds on the idea that a caregiver assessment has to start from the caregiver's own perspective. It's not the professional's assessment of the family caregiver and their capacity. It's my own understanding of what I can do, my own obligations outside of caregiving. And so I mentioned our Next Step in Care, What Do I Need as a Family Caregiver, and there's also a guide for providers on caregiver self-assessment, which is on our website at nextstepincare.org. There are other tools that are available. There's a nice tool that Myra Gleishen and colleagues developed on for caregivers of the medically ill, what are they concerned about, which is a little different from the longer-term mm-hmm. Issues of stress and burden. There are a number of things, but most, you know, the point I wanted to make in the article, it's that it's not that there's a perfect tool. There isn't. It's that the tool offers an opportunity for the nurse or the social worker to open a conversation about the caregiver's own sense of what is going to happen, how they can manage, what they can manage, and what they really need help with. So that's the purpose of the tool. I think sometimes I find people get fixated on, you know, this tool and this is the way to do it. Well, yeah, but you can do it with a lot of different tools. The point is that it opens a conversation, and that's what the beauty of a tool is. It's not the actual, you know, the filling in the blanks.
Well, I was thinking I would ask you, what's the one thing you would tell people, and I think you just did.
Well, we've learned that, and we have a learning collaborative, a Transitions in Care Quality Improvement Collaborative, where the teams used our tool, and they may have used other tools as well. And when it worked, it was a conversation. When it didn't work, it was, here's this tool, fill it out,
fill it
you
out.
Know,
yeah.
fill it out, and it didn't work. That's not, you know, it doesn't work that way. So.
The video that you participated in, along with the other folks at NYU, I think
right.
really illustrates that point of it
yes.
is about a conversation.
Exactly.
And I hope listeners to this audio cast will go and look at the video, which they can access from our website, and will be able to access through links right from the article and read the article. Because I think the we're only going to see more and more caregivers coming in as people are, and nurses know this already, people are in and out of the hospital in a blink.
Right.
And
right.
We do have so little time to prepare people, but with all the focus on reducing 30-day readmissions, I think this is one area where nurses can really excel in getting people prepared and then reducing that admission. I mean, the patient doesn't want to be there either.
Right. Well, you know, I do believe, and I think I said this on, and I know I said it in the article, and I hope I said it in the video, nurses and families actually have a lot in common because they really see the patient in a more holistic way than some other not-to-be-named healthcare professionals. And they understand, they see the quality of life is really important for the patient and the caregiver. And all too often, however, this breaks down in some kind of task-oriented things or learning problems. Whereas it really, if you focus on the goal, which is the better outcome for everyone, it really is a terrific partnership. And that's basically what I want to encourage.
Well, that's a perfect place to end, because I don't think we could end on a better note.
Carol, thank you.
Thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us and providing some more context for the series and the article, but more importantly, to just highlighting this work that's so important and that nurses really need to put a new emphasis on, I think, given what we've learned from the symposium and also the focus groups. It's the nurses also realize that they, in many ways, are falling short for the patient and the caregiver. And I think this series and certainly the tools that you present and then the other articles that will be coming along after, hopefully we'll be able to really make a difference and help nurses help the caregivers. So.
Well, thank you very much for undertaking this really important effort. It's going to make a difference.
Hope so. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.